Welcome. You are listening to Aftersight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thank you for joining us for Hobby Radio, read by Keith, amateur radio operator W0NX, featuring the May 2025 The Spectrum Monitor. We'll begin with RF Current, news from the world of communications by Ken Reitz, KS4CR. FCC's delete regulation reset. On March 12th, the FCC issued a public notice titled In Re Delete, which sought to identify FCC rules for the purpose of alleviating unnecessary regulatory burdens. Respondents had until April 11th to insert their comments in the docket known as Docket Number 25-133, with reply comments due by Monday, April 28th. By April 16th, nearly 1,000 comments and reply comments had been filed. Comments came in from individuals, technical consultants, corporations, individual amateurs, amateur radio clubs, GMRS repeater clubs, CB operators, radio station conglomerates, individual radio stations, space operations corporations, telecom giants, and nonprofits of every stripe. Even the American Bankers Association and a dozen other financial institutions weighed in. Many were simple one- or two-paragraph comments. Others were more complicated. Electronic Media Foundation, EMF, filed a 19-page document of comments. REC Networks filed an 80-page list of suggestions for reform, which included low-power FM, non-commercial educational FM stations, FM translators and boosters, international broadcast stations, and the amateur radio service. Many commenters advocated sweeping changes for whichever part of the spectrum they were interested in. Not surprisingly, commercial radio interests were concerned with deleting regulations concerning station ownership rules. There were advocates in favor of doing away with the amateur radio incentive licensing rules. Others wanted rules to remain as they are. In shortwave broadcasting, one group advocated for a change in regulations that would allow more domestic shortwave broadcasters to hit the airwaves. In its own filing, the ARRL advocated deletion of LF and VHF-UHF symbol baud rate and bandwidth limitations, as well as extending additional limited privileges for technician class operators to provide new licensees and introductory window to HF data and phone communications. There was no stated timeline for publication of new rules based on this review, and there is no way to guess what the results will be. An image on this page shows the emblem of the United States Federal Communications Commission, an eagle superimposed over two antenna masts with an antenna suspended between them, also a satellite dishes, and a microwave dish tower. Another image on this page shows the building of the USAGM. The text reads, USAGM Senior Advisor Kerry Lake cancels obscenely expensive 15-year, and then the text is cut off. And then the next line reads, Trump's executive order to drastically downsize agency. At the bottom of the image is the text, New HQ, USAGM signs lease to new downtown DC HQ, initiating a move that will save the agency millions. The text reads, USAGM dichotomy on its website, courtesy USAGM. Back to the article. USAGM shambles. An article in the Elizabeth City, North Carolina Daily Advance from April 11th headlined, "Historic Voice of America Site Signs Off." Told of the closing of the Edward R. Murrow Transmitting Station in Pitt County, North Carolina. The Voice of America and its parent agency, the United States Agency for Global Media, were shut down in mid-March as part of cost-cutting by the administration of President Donald Trump. Efforts to obtain more details from the agency about the shutdown of the station, also known as VOA Site B, were unsuccessful, including learning how many people employed at the site were either let go or placed on administrative leave. No one from the agency returned repeated telephone calls or emails. A man who answered the telephone at the Murrow station said that he was not authorized to answer questions. Efforts to obtain information or comment from U.S. Representative Greg Murphy of Greenville also were not successful. The article quoted Scott Feibusch, a broadcast engineer, historian, and radio industry consultant, as saying, "No one knows what the plan for this is, and if there is a plan, or what may become of the site." The article noted that Carrie Lake, introduced as a senior advisor to the USAGM, was reassigned to the U.S. Department of State, but no reasons were given or an explanation of what her duties, if any, are. The Associated Press reported March 28th that federal judge J. Paul Etkin of the New York District stopped the administration's efforts to dismantle VOA with a temporary restraining order. The court case was brought by the Media Freedom and Information Access Clinic at Yale Law School on behalf of 7 VOA journalists before Judge Etkin. Congress had approved $860 million for USAGM for the current fiscal year, but funds have remained frozen despite the restraining order. The USAGM website has also been frozen in time, with the last press release noting that Ms. Lake had canceled the agency's lease on its new headquarters building, which she declared was obscenely expensive. On the same page, the site declares that the new HQ will save the agency millions. The agency's X Twitter account no longer exists. The Radio Marti website shows the shortwave schedule from 2024. The USAGM saga is far from over. According to numerous media reports, April 23rd, a federal judge issued a preliminary injunction that orders the administration to return Voice of America employees and contractors to their status before the March 15th executive order that suspended their work, canceled congressionally approved funding, and effectively shut down USAGM broadcasts and web-based news and information services. Judge Royce C. Lamberth called the administration's decision to dismantle the agency arbitrary and capricious, noting, "Not only is there an absence of reasoned analysis from the defendants, there is an absence of any analysis whatsoever." He also said the Trump administration was likely in direct violation of numerous federal laws. Left out of his ruling were Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, and the Open Technology Fund because, while they are part of USAGM, their funding is done differently. Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, still unfunded. An image related to this article on this page shows people working at computer screens in an office setting. The caption reads, "Inside the Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty newsroom at headquarters in Prague, Czech Republic," courtesy RFERL. Back to the article. A report on the Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, RFERL website, April 10th, stated that RFERL had filed an updated emergency request in the U.S. District Court in Washington, D.C., asking the court to order the U.S. AGM to disperse RFERL's congressionally appropriated funds for the month of April. The filing comes after U.S. AGM informed RFERL that the agency would impose unlawful restrictions before disbursing any funding, including a requirement that U.S. AGM have ultimate control over the selection of RFERL's board of directors. U.S. AGM also imposed unmeetable 24-hour deadlines on a barrage of bureaucratic demands that represent a stark departure from past practice. RFERL's filing explains that enacted laws prohibit U.S. AGM's actions and seeks to ensure that RFERL obtains April funding to carry out its congressionally authorized mission. RFERL is subject to comprehensive oversight by Congress and U.S. AGM and has a track record of clean audits and a reputation for good governance. Over the past two fiscal years, RFERL has submitted more than 1,200 reports to U.S. AGM, the State Department Office of the Inspector General, OIG, Congress, and other federal entities. RFERL is also subject to audits by the Government Accountability Office, GAO, examining RFERL's operations, accounts, property, and records. Supplemental appropriations for foreign policy priorities, such as Afghanistan and Ukraine, are also subject to special oversight. RFERL holds hundreds of meetings each year with lawmakers and their staff and provides experts for testimony on Capitol Hill. In 2024, 20 U.S. lawmakers and 46 congressional staffers visited RFERL's Prague-based headquarters and bureaus to oversee its operations in person. RFERL holds frequent and productive conversations with the State Department, the National Security Council, and other executive branch agencies on a range of issues like journalist safety and press freedom. RFERL President and CEO Stephen Kappos said, RFERL has a well-earned reputation as an efficient and transparent organization that provides extraordinary value to the American people at limited cost. Adding unnecessary and extra bureaucracy from USAGM, which its own leaders have described as irretrievably broken, is not aligned with the goal of making government more effective. During a congressional hearing last year, then-chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Committee Michael McCaul, Republican of Texas, praised RFERL's good stewardship of its funding and said, "Look no further than RFERL as a shining example of how U.S. global media should function." And now the shortwave listener by Fred Waterer, programming_matters@yahoo.ca. Portuguese on shortwave, classic rock, and BBC Fair for May. Are you a Lusophone? If you are, there are 250 million people just like you. What is a Lusophone? A Lusophone is a person who speaks Portuguese. The Latin name for Portugal was Lusitania, a name now much more associated with a ship disaster than an Iberian country. Originating in Portugal, the Portuguese language spread through colonization and became the principal language of Brazil, Angola, Mozambique, Cape Verde, Macau, São Tomé e Príncipe, Guinea-Bissau, and East Timor. Significant immigrant populations are found in Canada, the U.S., France, Venezuela, Argentina, and other nations. In Canada, most Portuguese-speaking immigrants settled in or near Toronto. As a result, there are a significant number of radio and television programs in Portuguese, However, as Lusophones have become assimilated to Canada, the hours on the air have decreased considerably as second, third, and fourth generation Canadians lose the attachment to Portugal and the language. Today, one can hear Portuguese from a number of radio stations, some of them quite easily. From Brazil, the aforementioned Radio Nacional de Amazonia can often be heard on 6,180 and 11,780 kHz daily. Try the former most evenings and the latter during the day. The exciting news these days is that this station has added a very brief daily segment in English and Spanish. By very brief, I mean less than 5 minutes each. Still, it's an interesting development. No doubt they are testing the waters to see if this gets a reaction. Be sure and contact them if you hear them and encourage them to continue. I know I will. They seem to have a presence on Facebook and Twitter. The contact page was not working when I tried. I'll try to track this down for next month or email me if you find an email address. Radio Portugal, RDP, was once well heard on shortwave. It was interesting to hear in both English and Portuguese. During election campaigns, Radio Portugal would devote significant broadcast time to political broadcasts by the various parties. Eventually, RDP left shortwave altogether. Radio Brás was also well heard, again in both English and Portuguese, in the late 70s and early 80s. The external service closed down in the 1980s. RAE Argentina also broadcasts in Portuguese throughout the week via WRMI in Miami. Try them Monday to Friday at 2300 UTC on 7570 kHz and at 2330 UTC on 9955 kHz. Radio Exterior de España broadcasts in Portuguese, UTC Tuesday through Saturday on 9,690 and 17,715 kHz at 0,000. An image accompanying the article on this page shows a QSL card from Radio Nacional do Brasil. The date is the 17th of September, 1983, at 0215 UTC, and the frequency is 15,280 kHz. The caption reads, Vintage Radio Nacional do Brasil QSL, Author's Collection. Back to the text. Voice of America broadcasts in Portuguese met their demise along with other VOA language services. These are some of the easiest ones to hear. Portuguese is an interesting language. If one knows a smattering of French or Spanish, one can often figure out what is being discussed. Portuguese and Spanish are not always mutually intelligible. To my ear, I often mistake Portuguese for Russian. But that's just me. And you will hear lots of music from Brazil. Broadcasting in the Portuguese language on shortwave is alive and well. Vatican Radio has some interesting and surprising at times programming content. Listen at 1630 UTC on 13,830 and 15,565 kHz and at 2000 on 9,705 and 11,870 kHz. Programming covers a wide variety of topics, from activities at the Vatican to programming about Africa and other developing countries not often heard about in the media. Vatican also has a live stream which runs most of the day via their website. I often listen to this for the music, most of which is classical. You will hear a wide variety, featuring everything from Tchaikovsky's Nutcracker Suite to Bolero to Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue. You will also hear programming often carried on shortwave, but rarely heard in North America. Extra editions of English for Africa, daily world news bulletins, Latin messes, and other Latin programming, papal audiences, and so on. Programs are often multilingual. To hear this, simply go to the Vatican Radio website at vaticannews.va and click on Live Now. It's quite enjoyable. In fact, I'm listening as I type this while my batteries recharge on my shortwave receiver. From the website, you can also listen to specific Vatican Radio programs, such as English for Africa, News in Latin, Vatican and World News, and so on. These options are also replicated for the Vatican's many other language services as well. There is a lot of great listening, both on shortwave and online, from the Vatican. Speaking of classical music, WRMI informs us of new times for Encore, our classical music program from Bryce Avery, since the time change. 0200 to 0300 UTC, Friday, 5,850 kHz. 2000 to 2100 UTC, Friday, 15,770 kHz. 0100 to 0200 UTC, Sunday, 5,850 kHz. 0300 to 0400 UTC, Monday, 5,950 kHz, 0200 to 0300 UTC, 1,300 to 1,400 UTC, Tuesday, 15,770 kHz. This is a wonderful program. From Bryce's website, like many others, I enjoy listening to both shortwave and classical music. Sadly, since the world has gone digital and many large state-funded stations have gone off the air or reduced their output, Western classical music programs have almost disappeared. Radio Romania International is, I think, the only station that regularly broadcasts a concert on their Romanian service, very early on Sunday mornings. In many ways, of course, it makes no sense to send complex and nuanced sound on shortwave because of all that nature and man can throw at it en route to the receiver. Signal is sometimes barely discernible above noise. But that's the point, isn't it? Like so much in life, the obstacles that make something difficult or unpredictable become part of the reason for doing it. You can read more about the program at Tumbril, that's tumbril.co.uk. As for that Romanian broadcast Bryce mentions, try tuning at 0100 UTC Sunday on 11,945 kHz for radio concert season per Alan Rowe's excellent Music on Shortwave list, downloadable from many sources, such as the SWLing post and the Programming Matters Facebook group. Google is your friend. Staying with WRMI, listings for Radio Mystery Theater for the month include April 26, Inner Sanctum Radio Show Terror by Night, 1945. May 3, Lights Out Radio Show, Nobody Dies, 1936. May 10th, Escape Radio Show, Love Came to Professor Gildea, 1948. May 17th, Broadway's My Beat Radio Show, The Ben Elliott Murder Case, 1950. We'll continue this article next time. Thank you for joining us for Hobby Radio, read by Keith.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.